Coming up in this episode,
they wish they could stop consuming Coca-Cola, but they just did not feel they were able to.
I don't normally think of Coca-Cola spreading disinformation. I know they spread sugar, but how are they spreading disinformation? I honestly preferred the taste of Pepsi to Coca-Cola.
And you call yourself a Southerner.
I know.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB. I'm Orlando Montoy.
And I'm Peter Biello. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge.
All right, Orlando, let's start this off by talking about, we'll say childhood.
Yeah.
Right? Let me ask you, did you drink a lot of Coke as a kid?
I drank a lot of sugary products that made me very large. Whether they were Coke or not, I can't remember. I do remember Kool-Aid. The big red Kool-Aid, just like sugar in water. That's what it was.
Yeah. I asked because I had a lot of Coke as a child. Like, rode my bike around the city a whole lot, and the only thing that ever went into the water bottle holder was not water. It was one of those 20-ounce bottles of Coke, and consumed it like it was water. And as a kid, you know, it was fine. You know, I ran around enough to sort of burn that off. But as an adult, I certainly wouldn't.
How did you not get large?
Yeah, well, you know, I never was super like slender, like skin and bones, but
baseball.
I was never large either. So
all
sort of in the middle.
You do.
It was ubiquitous. It was on the dinner table when I was a kid. Was it on your dinner table as well or no?
I don't remember it. No.
It was a Kool-Aid.
It was Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid.
I still love lemonade and Kool-Aid and stuff like that.
Well, what about now? Do you drink a lot now?
No. My preferred drink is fizzy water, just seltzer water, just plain soda without the flavoring. That's my go-to drink.
Yeah.
I did drink Coke and Pepsi a lot at one time. I remember that I went to Japan once in the year 2004 with a group of Georgians, and you know, in Japan, they're all crazy about Coca-Cola, and on our team, I was the only one who was drinking Pepsi. I honestly preferred the taste of Pepsi to Coca-Cola.
And you call yourself a Southerner.
I know. I disavow that era of my life now.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because today's book is all about Coca-Cola. It's a book called Sweet and Deadly, How Coca-Cola Spreads Disinformation and Makes Us Sick. It's by Murray Carpenter.
And who is Murray Carpenter?
Murray Carpenter is a journalist. He's written for various outlets, New York Times among them. He's also been a public radio journalist for Maine Public at one time in his life. So he had a previous book about caffeine. And he started to look into the health effects of sugar-sweetened beverages when he learned that, you know, that we drink more caffeine by volume through soda than any other beverage, more than coffee or tea, for example. So we started to look into sugar-sweetened beverages.
And you said disinformation. Now, I don't normally think of Coca-Cola spreading disinformation. I know they spread sugar, but how are they spreading disinformation?
Let's be clear too. Disinformation is—it's not just misinformation, right? It's not just wrong information, but it's wrong information or misleading information spread deliberately. So that's quite a claim that Murray Carpenter is making in this book. And one of the ways that Carpenter claims and spells out how Coca-Cola does this is through subsidizing research that benefits the companies, spreads messages that essentially benefit the company. Now, he's not saying, and he's very careful to say, that you know, the company is not necessarily like forcing these researchers to say things they don't believe, or that the researchers are being disingenuous. But he is saying that they are very, very keen on amplifying and supporting researchers that.
So it's funding research saying that sugar is good?
Or that it's not as bad as any other food, or that exercise, for example, plays a greater role in overall health than consumption of, you know, sugar sweetened beverages.
And do we know when this research comes out that Coca-Cola is tied to it?
Good question. I asked Murray Carpenter about that.
This varies a lot. So in some cases that, you know, that because they have funded an awful lot of research, in some cases there is the kind of disclosure you would expect to see at the end of a a published paper. You know, this research was supported by Coca-Cola, et cetera. In other cases, that was omitted and was later added if someone found that as a correction or a clarification later. So there's quite a variety, but certainly the most impactful research that has sort of exonerated sugar-sweetened beverages has often not disclosed that.
Now, before we go any further, can we get some more specific about the sort of harm we're talking about? I mean, I can assume that, you know, because we're talking about sugar here, that we're talking about increased calories that could associate to weight gain and to chronic illness. So what kind of harm are we talking about?
Well, it's really good to get this spelled out because, yeah, it does have to do with the high calorie content. But, you know, a lot of foods have high calorie content, like trail mix, for example, like a handful of trail mix, ton of calories, but it's meant to be taken with you when you're hiking up a mountain, right? When you're already burning a ton of calories.
Next podcast, deadly peanuts.
Yeah. Yeah. So Murray Carpenter says sugar sweetened beverages like Coca-Cola, yeah, they have a lot of calories, but they're different than other foods. And here's how he explains why.
What research is increasingly finding is that a calorie of sugar is metabolized quite differently than other products that also have, you know, some fat or protein or fiber in them. And so a calorie of sugar is rapidly metabolized and, you know, has some of the fructose is going into your liver, you know, the glucose is going into your bloodstream quickly. It has different effects on your body than, again, say, a calorie of almonds.
And so essentially, because of the way sugar is metabolized, he explains, you know, eating some sugar like you would when you consume a Coke, it basically floors the gas pedal on your pancreas to produce insulin. And over time, you know, you just can't do that forever to your pancreas. It slows down, it damages it, and then that's how you end up with something like type 2 diabetes. So a calorie is not exactly a calorie when you think about it in those
terms.
Can
we burn off calories?
What's that?
Can't we just burn off calories?
Oh, yeah, you can. There's the calories in, calories out method you may have heard about with weight loss. And Coca-Cola has kind of spread this through another way. It kind of spreads quote-unquote disinformation, according to Murray Carpenter, which is through funding nonprofits like the Global Energy Balance Network. Was one example of a nonprofit that they funded to push that idea that, you know, calories in, calories out. A calorie of almonds is the same as a calorie of Coca-Cola. So anything in excess is going to be bad for you. The real thing we should be focusing on is exercise and getting moving. And that's kind of what they were pushing in that regard, saying don't worry about the sugar so long as you are active. And who can argue with getting more exercise, right? It's hard to go against, especially for Americans, right? The idea that we need more exercise in our lives.
I mean, it's always good to push for more exercise. But, you know, I guess diet is diet. I mean, you can't just consume one thing. You can't consume all this, all that. So, I mean, there's a phrase, you can't outrun a bad diet.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, you can, at least when I'm speaking for myself, and I know this is true of other people I've spoken to, is that you can't physically do enough exercise to erase everything you've eaten in a day. Unless you are Michael Phelps or some other kind of elite athlete, it's just not going to happen.
Five cakes and ice cream, you can't exercise that away.
I mean, the most people can't, right? Unless you were an elite athlete, you're not going to be able to do that. So moderation is key in all things. And there's one more thing that Carpenter writes about in citing evidence that, or research that he seems to think is good, which is that, you know, there's the concept of satiety,
sort of term of art in nutrition, or having a sense of being full after a meal. And this is one of the real challenges with liquid sugars, is that you can consume, say, you know, a Big Mac and fries and a Coke at the same time, and you can get, as you know, maybe as many calories from that Coke as you do from the Big Mac and fries, but you're not feeling over full because it's liquid. And so it's easy to overconsume calories in this form because it doesn't even feel like you're getting full often when you're consuming these. So that's one of the real challenges is often these calories come on top of your regular diet.
So in other words, if you have sugar sweetened beverages, you're getting all those calories, but you still feel hungry. So it's likely you're going to eat another big chunk of calories just to get that feeling of being full. And he wrote that, generally speaking, as human beings, and this is one researcher that he cites, you know, if we eat a big dinner, right, we're going to eat a smaller breakfast, kind of, because we're still full, we're going to compensate for that. Same thing, you know, eat a big breakfast, you might have a smaller lunch or skip it altogether, depending how big your breakfast is. But if you're including a sugar-sweetened beverage in one of those giant meals, you are less likely to compensate the next meal because you're not going to be as full, but you're still consuming a ton of calories. So you're having a giant meal plus normal size meals as opposed to a giant meal plus a smaller than usual meal. So that's one way that, sugar-sweetened beverages encourage people to eat more.
I can tell you, you're giving me PTSD because I have had issues with this weight loss and what to eat and, you know, do you eat a big meal and, you know, all those calories? So, you know, it's good to hear about this. I mean, I everybody knows about sugary drinks. You shouldn't drink them. But what about the where the sugar comes from? Because there's all this, you know, Mexican Coke, you know, pure cane sugar. I mean,
yeah, the Mexican
some
Coke
sugar
the,
is better for you
now
than others. I mean,
it does. Carpenter said it doesn't matter. You know, this from a nutritional standpoint, there's not much of a difference between, you know, the cane sugar that's in a Mexican Coke or the high fructose corn syrup that you're going to get in a traditional American Coke. And, you know, and just to clarify too, you know, it's not to say you should never have this stuff, but it's good to be mindful about it, you know, and it's good to be, certainly good to be aware of the kind of marketing that is going into this kind of thing. And to remember too that, you know, it's caloric. It's a part of our lives, but we got to be careful. We got to be real careful.
What about the addictive quality though? I mean, Coca-Cola is kind of good. It's like, you know, sugar and caffeine.
Yeah, that's true. Caffeine is an addictive drug. And I did ask Carpenter about the drink's addictive qualities.
You know, increasingly people are understanding that these substances do have addictive qualities. They're, you know, they make you feel good when you take them. You know, you feel lousy when you take them. You continue to take them or consume them, even if you know that they are somewhat harmful. And I did talk to people for the book who really had this feeling, like they wish they could stop consuming Coca-Cola, but they just did not feel they were able to. So the science is ever evolving, I would say, on this. And it is, I think, increasingly accepted, not just to talk about Coca-Cola soft drinks as addictive, but also this whole category of ultra processed foods as addictive.
And we didn't even get into Coca-Cola's efforts and the sugar-sweetened beverage industry's efforts to nip in the bud any soft drink tax that municipalities have tried to impose or thought about imposing. They've always fought those, and they've gone to great lengths to do it, as you might expect.
Well, if they do a soda tax, put it on the sugary sodas, because I like my non-sugary sodas. I just kind of like the feel of the carbonation.
Just like carbonated water with like a little bit of artificial flavoring. Yeah. Zero calories, zero sweeteners,
zero calorie sodium. Stuff.
Yeah.
Now, one of the questions I want to know is if Murray Carpenter is in the witness protection program at this point, going up against a giant like Coca-Cola, should we go into the witness protection program now?
Well, I mean, Coca-Cola has had its enemies for a very long time, they don't seem to be mysteriously falling out of windows, so I think we're okay. But Murray Carpenter here says everything that Coca-Cola wants to do, it does very well, for better or for worse. And he did reach out to them to see if he could get them to comment on what he's been finding and if they wanted to sort of rebut anything. And he said they wouldn't make anybody available for an interview. So he did his job as a journalist, though, and he did ask for their side.
And so what gives this book the narrative edge? What is it that we should read it for?
Well, I'll say this on the sentence level, it's as clear as it gets. You know, it is... The sentences are written in such a way that, well, you can kind of tell he has been a radio journalist in a way where, you know, both of us are kind of trained to write in short sentences, very simple and direct. Stylistically, he likes to put people at the center of each new chapter that he starts, whether it's a researcher or a Coca-Cola executive. He gets close to them and their perspectives, even if they don't, you know, talk to him. He's found records that sort of open up worlds to him that aren't really open to the rest of us. And that makes it very human. He also uses a kind of colloquial style where if he's listing a bunch of examples, before you get tired of the examples, he'll say, you get the idea. And that's just that kind of style, I think, to me, it sounds like I'm being told by a friend, like, hey, here's something that you should really pay attention to. Here's some disinformation that you've been fed. You might want to, you know, deconstruct it and think about how it might affect your life. And also, like you, you know, I've dealt with my weight loss issues. Like, I've been 40 pounds heavier. I've been 20 pounds lighter than I am right now. It's just, it is what it is. I love to eat. So I have followed the calories in, calories out argument for quite some time. And it is a controversial debate. And I learned something new about it in this book. And I think that was worth it for me personally. So yeah, highly recommend it.
All right. The book is called Sweet and Deadly, How Coca-Cola Spreads Disinformation and Makes Us Sick, by Murray Carpenter. Peter, thanks for telling me about it.
Happy to.